There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name is Matt Messiano and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burrell, although not in person this time, unfortunately. But if you do want to catch that episode, you can go back and listen to the time when we all met in person only, was it last week, 2 weeks ago? I can't remember when it was now, but it was a lovely time, and it was so great to meet both of you in person. It was long time overdue, but it was really, really good. I hope you both recovered from that session of... shall we say, more than a couple of beverages?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's slightly quieter circumstances now, isn't it? But yeah, no, it was really good to meet in person and get the opportunity to actually do that after a long, long time. But yeah, it feels like it was just a week ago. I think it must have been almost two now. But I don't know. Who even knows? Was it two? Yeah, 2 weeks almost.
I think we've probably had a couple of beers before we decided to start doing the podcast amidst a live band, which was a bit of a crazy decision, but it was a chance to pod whilst we were all in person, and we didn't want to face the rain like the From the Rocky End Boys. So
it was a now or never decision, and obviously, of course, it just so happened that the second we stopped recording, the band finished playing.
Well.
So that was always going to happen, but I hope somebody derived some enjoyment from the episode, despite
indeed,
the chaos.
Indeed. Not talking about as happy times though. Of course, that was after a Watford victory. We are now podding after the last game of the season. A pretty disappointing, really, 3-1 defeat. Quite lacklustre in the end, really, Jordan.
Yeah, it was a bit, wasn't it? It wasn't great. It was kind of whimpered out the season in the end, didn't we? It wasn't particularly spectacular. Obviously, we had moments and it felt like obviously we got back into the game, but it just wasn't really that competitive in a sense. It felt like Middlesbrough fancied it a little bit more, as cliche as that is. But yeah, not an amazing end to the season.
Mm. Yeah, Tom, it's a shame we couldn't have switched those two games around, isn't it? Because that would have been a nicer finish for us.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to finish on a high, and I think that's just a little bit of a sour note to finish on, isn't it? Particularly as it was away and people had to get up at the crack of dawn to go up there. But, you know, in the scheme of things, it means very little, and I think things will look rather different by the start of next season.
Mm. I think the main difference between the two sides really was Middlesbrough were, you know, clearly still putting a bit of effort in, and they had the guys on the pitch who could finish, and we just, I think, you know, it's highlighting an area that we know Tom needs to address, but you know, we really need to look for that you know, that starting striker next season. I don't think that we currently have him in the building at the moment.
Yeah, I think that was the key difference, that Middlesbrough's XG was kind of 2.5-ish, and ours was sort of 1.5-ish, and most of that came from the Wesley Hoot goal, which seems kind of strange because I didn't think that was necessarily an easy chance to put away. But, you know, you look at their centre forward, Emmanuel Latilath, he had an XG of nearly 1.5 on his own. Mileta Rajovic was our kind of leading attacking player in terms of XG with 0.14, which I think just about sums it up. And obviously, you know, that's chance quality as much as anything. If the calibre of chances don't come your way, then you can't be kind of necessarily blamed for it. But I think that is the part of the problem. And Tom cleverly said afterwards that as a general point in his now 9 games in charge, that I don't think I've been able to unlock our potential in possession since I've come in. And I think that's kind of telling in that we discussed it ad nauseum now, but we've seen some improvement in terms of defensive phases of play, but the other side needs to come now. And I guess that's the big challenge for him over the summer. It's a point that brings me on to the fact that we asked for questions, knowing that there wasn't going to be a vast amount to talk about after the Borough game. And we got one that ties in quite nicely with this, which I'll offer up, which is from @EasyMark2010, who says, is our top goal scorer next season already at the club? And if so, who is he? Do you want to take that one, Jordan?
Oh, yeah. Is he at the club? It's tough. It's really difficult to say. What the club do in the striking position, let's just assume that our top scorer is going to be a striker. What they do at that position is going to be quite interesting. Obviously, we know we've got the two in our hands at most. Well, they very possibly will be here next year in Rajovic and Bio. Obviously, you can't rule out the fact that they either could leave or both could leave potentially as well. We also have the return of Shaq Ford as well. Who may be
Ashley Fletcher as well.
Yeah, well, I think we can safely say that he won't be in contention for the top scorer spot should he return. I don't know. I honestly, the thing is, I'm not sure I can see the club. I think one striker will join, whether or not it'll be someone that's in the mould of a player that could potentially be top scorer. Bless you. Sorry, my dog sneezing in the background there. I think yes, they're at the club currently. And I'm going to say it's going to be Rajovic again, which is obviously a massive guess at this point. But I can kind of see us thinking, looking at that return from Rajovic and thinking that we've got something there. And this is just knowing how Gino operates. You know, he likes to take gambles. He likes to take chances at certain positions. And I think it's possible he'll look at that team and just look at the return and think that Tom Cleverley should be able to get something out of him or enough out of him for him to be a leading striker next year, despite the opinion of myself and many others.
For what it's worth, I agree with all of that. And I think there's so many cases of players having undue faith placed in them under Pozzo, either by giving them long-term contracts and all the evidence would suggest otherwise, giving them another chance when they've been out on loan, or in the case of someone like Keenan Davis, oh, it didn't work out at Watford. Oh, go and try Serie A instead. See if it works out there, you know. So, yeah, I tend to agree it would probably be, if it's not Rajovic, then it will still be someone already at the club.
On that note, I mean, I know Mr. Potter hasn't really had much input in Udinese. That's Morca's father, but they're not doing particularly well at the moment under their, you know, their model. Maybe it's something that needs to be looked at for both sides in terms of a change of how things are ran and operated there. But that's probably a question for another pod, an Udinese one, really. But yeah, okay. Well, as you brought up the questions, Tom, shall we dive straight into those and we can circle back to the Middlesbrough game as and when we feel it's relevant?
Yes, yeah, sounds good, mate. We've got a nice bunch of questions, actually. Most of them looking ahead to next season, I think, which is quite good as well. So first one from Nick Lansing at Toast Haiku, who says, am I prescient or crazy? There's a fine line there. For thinking Watford should do okay next season. We score by committee, kind of touching on the previous question. Our defence is solid. Goalkeeper too, no matter what Uncle Ron says. Hi, Rupert. Asprey will be missed, but isn't a crippling loss. I think we'll be safely mid-table. How do we think about that? Prescient or crazy, Nick?
I feel harsh to say crazy, but...
but you're thinking it.
Well, look, the fact is, you look at the table, it's not, you look at the table at the end of the season, it's not good viewing for Watford fans. 6 points outside of the relegation zone is too close for comfort with a squad that is most, or very possibly on paper, going to be worse off if you are to lose the likes of, you know, Espria, potentially Kone, and maybe some others too, you know, to talk of other players in that team, Tondi Bashir and so on, not being here. Do you have faith in the club? You know, reinvesting? Hard to say at this point, not a ton of faith. So, you know, I think it is a precarious situation. I'm honestly hoping that, you know, in some ways I'm glad that we finished in the position we did to maybe kind of re-emphasize how far off we are from playoffs, and maybe we'll do something about it. But I would say we certainly can't be complacent. So maybe I wouldn't say crazy. I understand what you're saying. There are some pieces there, and in the standard of the league can vary quite heavily. We're not the only poor team, obviously, but I don't know. I'm at the point where I do have some genuine concerns about next year as it stands.
Well, he says the defensive is solid, goalkeeper two. I think maybe the word he's missing there is enough. It's the defence and goalkeeper are solid enough for Watford to have a similar season to what they've had this season. I think if we're all, you know, being honest, I think we'd like to add in both of those areas. I doubt the goalkeeper will be added to, but hopefully we can get in another, ideally, left-sided centre-back to help out there. And then with regards to a spear we missed but isn't a crippling loss, I don't know. I mean, sometimes it feels like he's the only person that can sort of unlock the game a bit for us. So we certainly need some kind of creativity from somewhere. Maybe Chakvatadze, you know, like a year on, will be that guy. But I think he will be missed. And that is assuming that he's going, which I think is probably likely. But
yeah, I think the thing with Espria is people probably look at the assists and goals and go, well, if he's that great, he should get more goals and assists. But, and I haven't done this because I'm lazy, but I suspect you would find that a lot of goals owe something to him. Either he's the pass before the assist, or he takes away two men with a run, or he does a significant bit of work in the build-up that creates the space or the overload or whatever it may be to contribute to the goal without getting the kind of the headline-grabbing goal or assist. That would be my suspicion. I think he is alone for us in his ability to do the things that he does, and I think we will miss him. To round off Nick's question, I think you're probably right, actually, Matt. I make you right. We'll do enough. I have no expectation of us being any better or much higher than we finished this season just gone. And I think our kind of floor could be lower again, given we expect to lose players and not really have the resources to strengthen.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks very much for the question, though. That's it's great. Great start off to the questions that we've had in.
It's probably one to revisit at the start of pre-season, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no reason why Nick might be absolutely spot on there, but I think at the moment we're
absolutely
sure. So,
well, I think we're at the point too. When you have a few pieces like we have in the Championship, you know, with the standard it is, you are kind of a few added or a few taken away from being a successful failure to an extent, aren't you? So it really depends on how much faith or what the likelihood is you feel is of the owner actually supporting the team a little bit more this season and in turn supporting the head coach. So I think this will be a really interesting offseason anyway, because, you know, one of the things we didn't mention there is all the players that are going back off loan as well that we might not be seeing back next year. So we have to kind of bear that in mind as well in our thinking when it comes to planning ahead.
No, absolutely. Well, you mentioned there the senior figures, Jordan, which leads us nicely into this next one from @sports_casual. What would the responsibilities of a senior figure to oversee Clevs actually look like? Would this be a strange of strategy by Pozzo? Could it cause friction with the recruitment side of things? I think the point here to fill in for anyone that's missed it is that Tom Cleverley said he's close to appointing a kind of experienced head to go in his coaching staff after confirming that Damon Lathrop and Armin Kavadja are going to be part of his team next season. How do we see that kind of working, that dynamic? That dynamic working next season once that person's in situ?
I don't think it's necessarily overseeing, though, is it? It's more of a senior level of support to his current staff, I assume, is the...
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's important. I think what I like about Tom Cleverley so far, and I'll be paraphrasing, so I won't give exact quotes, but things that we've seen in interviews with him and press conferences from him, he seems to have at least an understanding and almost, you know, public ability to talk about it publicly too, of his potential weaknesses, which is, you know, a major aspect of, you know, being a good coach as well, is knowing where you're not strong and getting that supporting staff to help with that. And I think that's a good sign at the very least. So let's see who the appointment is. Let's see how it works out. It's going to be hard for us to judge fully from our perspective. But, you know, I think it's good that we're looking to, you know, be careful and add the staff that he wants to come in. But I guess I'm not sure that really answered the question or not, but...
No, I think that's fine. The questions explicitly were, what would it look like and would it mean a change of kind of strategy and would that cause friction? I think the point is, it's a change of strategy, because coaches previously have been, on the whole, more experienced than Cleverley by far. Even Chisco had had a job before coming here, hadn't he? So kind of giving him the remit to appoint several coaching staff members isn't a new thing, but the kind of makeup of that is somewhat different. Is it going to cause recruitment friction? You would hope that the fact that the club have obviously signed off on it and think that it's a sensible move means that it won't. And what kind of responsibilities, I guess that will be kind of defined on an ongoing basis and iterated over the course of the season, won't it? Because you learn fast on a job like this, I imagine. And, you know, what you kind of lean on someone with that experience for in the first kind of 3 months of the season will probably have changed by the end of the season. And probably also a lot hinges on what that person's experience in the game is like and what their kind of personal strengths and weaknesses are. There can't be many people out there who are, you know, brilliant at everything that are considering coming to Watford. So it's going to be interesting to see. But we discussed the need or otherwise for an experienced kind of head to go in alongside Tom when we did the live pod. And I think it's probably not a bad thing. And it seems to be that it's been driven by him, which would have been the most important thing for me.
I think that's the difference too. It's alongside rather than oversee. Unless I've missed something, I don't think there's someone who'll be brought in to oversee Cleverley in any capacity that's kind of authoritative over him. So I think it's more of a plus to add to his staff than it is someone to kind of monitor him and have any say over Tom.
No, definitely.
Adrian Boothroyd seemingly threw his hat in the ring when he was on the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast, didn't
he? Yeah, he did. Not sure about that one.
I wouldn't have put him down as someone that would have been interested in a number two.
Oh, I think there's tons of people throwing number ones at him, though.
No, exactly. In the same podcast, and this caught my interest, he said, you know, I think my level to come back and manage is the Championship. So, yeah, I don't know. He might have set his expectations a little high there.
Bold.
At Brad Has One asks, what does success for Tom Cleverley look like next year and what would failure be? Continuing the TC theme. Go on, Matt, you take that first. Success and failure, what would they look like?
I think success is honestly bettering our position this season, which is, you know, quite a large area.
yeah, 14 other places.
I think probably for him, top half of the table is success. I think the difference will be what the Pozzos define as being success, which is probably playoffs, because they seemingly still think that we should be there. Which, I mean, arguably we should. If the investment in the squad is there, then, you know, we could get to the playoffs. But currently, you know, we can't. And I think Tom would be doing very well to get us in a top half finish, personally.
Yeah, I would go along with that in terms of success being a top half finish or any kind of improvement on this season. And failure is probably relegation. If he stays up on the final season, then on the final day of the season, then, you know, I'm not going to be dancing with delight. But I think that would be a reasonable thing. The point about kind of playoff expectations and so on is quite interesting, I think, because someone tweeted us a few tables that former pod guest Kieran Maguire from the Price of Football podcast had put together, looking at kind of cost of squad building in the Championship based on the most recent set of accounts. And based on Watford's 22-23 accounts, we had kind of got the highest gross squad cost in the division. We were fourth for cost of player purchases. We were third for wages, and we were third for average team wage, which all of which, you know, and obviously we've lost players since then, and that's, you know, the previous accounting period, but it does kind of point to a pretty consistent theme and pretty consistent trend of failing to really recruit properly. So and get the most bang for our buck, I suppose. So that will be interesting. That I suppose the point I'm trying to make is, if we have had kind of more investment and budget than a lot of other teams and still come up short, we really need to get it right with less money to spend, because the kind of perceived wisdom is that salary wage bill should roughly equal your finishing position, and it evidently hasn't for us, which is a pretty big red flag, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's a difficult one to gauge, because obviously this is all dependent on what the owner also deems a success for Tom in terms of how long he's going to be around for. So I think for me personally, I to see some sort of obviously improvement, incremental improvement would be nice, feels like it's somewhat important, but you know, these are also seasons where it feels like we've gotten worse over the years in recent years. You know, we've gone down consistently almost. So I'd say looking to find a style of play, you know, potentially build upon something a little bit like that, rather than having this, you know, what we've seen so far from Tom has been very situational. You know, the whole objective of his management so far has been stop losing games. That's really been the main target, which is not something you can set as a season long target. That's a short term immediate goal that we have to recalibrate and see what the expectation is now. And I think for him it's going to be, okay, how do I find a balance to the team? Because, you know, it's not easy, is maybe a little bit harsh, but it's definitely easier to put a particular focus on the team in a short term situation rather than having the flexibility to ebb and flow between, you know, being an offensive and defensive team, or, you know, somewhat of a more balanced team. It's a much more difficult task. So we're going to probably set our own targets very much dependent or based on what the squad looks like come the start of the season. That'll probably give us a better idea of how to kind of judge what Cleverley should or shouldn't be achieving. But if you had to say in a broader sense what it would be, I think it's just finding balance to a team that has been really inconsistent to the point of almost costing us a relegation place, but only not by 6 points. So it's a big task, and one that I'm quite curious to see how Tom handles, and also the club.
In a similar theme to a couple of the questions so far, this one probably follows on nicely next, at @Watford_Douglas. Given that it doesn't appear we're in a rebuild and are slowly regressing each season, is relegation to League One a serious concern next year? Again, early in the summer, but what do we think as we stand here on May the 6th? Are we concerned about the drop?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You have to be.
Make that three, I agree.
May that four.
Yeah, Train agrees too.
Train agrees too. You can't get a much stronger vote of confidence than that.
That's it, yeah.
4 out of 3 is not bad. it should be a concern. It should be a concern because, as you know, 6 points is not a big buffer there at all. As we said earlier, it could be a squad that, you know, feasibly could be worse based on how we've seen the owner operate in the past. So, you know, I think if you don't have that in mind, then you're being naive and you're doing the team a disservice, because we have to be very cognizant of the fact that whilst we might have, you know, hopes of aspirations of playing higher up the table next year, you can't discount the fact that we were very close and that this team got us into a position where we were very close. So maybe that makes you rethink things, but I think we should be at least not heavily concerned, but we should be considering it in our planning for next season, because if we didn't, I would fear for the worst. I don't want to give a depressing answer, that sounds kind of depressing, but is that unfair or not?
No,
I think that's totally rational. Totally fair, yeah.
Well, what about you two? You both feel the same though in terms of that, or is it something you feel maybe a bit more optimistic about?
No, I agree with you entirely. I think I'm optimistic for next season because of Tom Cleverley, essentially. But and that's, you know, Tom Cleverley the person rather than Tom Cleverley the manager at this stage, to be clear. But no, absolutely. You look at the players that we expect to lose and we know we're going to lose because they're on loan. The fact that the squad's already thin and all these kind of contributory factors. I don't have a great deal of belief in the recruitment side of things. So, I fully expect it to be a tough year again for us next season. If someone offered me 15th again and avoiding the drop, I think I would take that now, to be quite honest.
With the current set of players.
Yeah, definitely. That's it.
Yeah.
I guess the margins are fine though too, aren't they? You're never far off the other end either if a few things change.
I mean, that is the beauty of this division, isn't it? That harking back to quite a few years ago now, but there was the year that Palace were in the bottom three when Ian Dowie took over and he got them promoted via the playoffs. So, you know, it's entirely possible that you can get on a run, but it's entirely possible you can get on a bad run as well and get sucked right down into it. Look at Birmingham. They would have thought they were safe when probably did, to be honest with you, when Tony Mowbray went off with his illness. They probably thought, okay, yeah, we can afford to kind of lose him. It's not going to be a disaster. And lo and behold, it was.
And Norwich on the flip side as well.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. They came to our place and the fans were fuming, weren't they? And they lost that night and there they are in the playoffs. So it just shows you it is the division of fine margins.
Here's a question for you, Tom. Would a drop to League One help Watford in any way?
I know why you're asking it, because I think there are clubs where it does help and you see them go down and they reset properly and they come back better. Someone like Sunderland have done it. Ipswich have done it, obviously, with the double bounce. Even Portsmouth, you know, they've gone down into League Two, but they will come back a much, much stronger team. I don't think we've got, and Derby are another one, I should say, I don't think we've necessarily got the foundations to do that. I think we're on, you know, our foundations are built on sand at the moment. If, say we're 12 months down the line and we get relegated, but we've got a new ownership and things are changed and the debt is cleared, then yeah, I'd say, okay, fine. Do you know what? It's probably not a bad thing for a hard reset. But as it stands, I would be very concerned about us if we went down. Very concerned from a kind of financial perspective. I don't think we would reap any benefit from that.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Can I? Next one. At Richard Steeden, at Steed RO. How likely is it that Tom Cleverley would only have accepted the job with conditions, i.e. a promise from Gino that he'll bring in a centre-forward, a left-back, a midfielder, etc. over the summer? What do we reckon? That presumably, yes, that there were maybe not conditions, but at least an agreement of how things were going to pan out in the next 7 or 8 weeks.
You know, it's tough though. I don't know. I think the thing is, it's a job that he probably wasn't expecting to get for quite a while. So, you know, maybe that gave the club a little bit more flexibility to not be as generous in what they offered or promised to him, because it was potentially too good of an opportunity to turn down, regardless of that. So, you know, maybe there's something like that. But I don't know. I'm not sure if. Maybe you kind of psychoanalyze a bit too much here, but I'm not sure if Tom is someone that would necessarily, especially knowing the situation as he does, I'm not sure he's someone that necessarily really fight that corner too hard. I think he'll be relatively pleased to have the job and then go from there. But maybe I'm wrong. Do you guys disagree on that?
I think it's a good point that you make about Cleverley maybe getting the job earlier than expected and not being in that kind of bargaining position. I'd like to think that he's smart enough and clued up enough to know how it works and therefore would have, if not sought guarantees or conditions, then sought guarantees to say, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do that to the best of our ability kind of thing. You know, you can't say definitively on whatever day he was appointed, yes, we're going to sign a centre forward this summer, because you just don't know how things are going to pan out, right? But I would like to think that he would have said, right, these are the players I need, kind of areas or profile or whatever it may be. Are we going to work on that? Yes. Am I going to be allowed to bring in my own staff? Yes. These sort of things. I would like to think so, but you may be right. Maybe I'm looking at that one through a kind of glass half full lens. We've got a couple more. What do you think the squad? And this is kind of looking at about squad build now. Nick Core, at Nick Core. What do you think the squad will look like next year with players coming back from loans, etc.? So we've got how many to leave us on loan? It's only really Jamal Lewis and Mateus Martins who are in on loan, isn't it? So they
Dennis will... as well.
Of course, sorry. That says a lot in itself, doesn't it? Emmanuel Dennis. So as it stands, those three are going to leave, of course. We've got Luza, Ferreira, Jorge Cabezas Hurtado, Samuel Kalou, Kwadwo Bar.
Nice accent.
Thank
there,
you.
Tom.
And Ash. Yeah, and Ashley Fletcher out on loan nominally. I think Kwadwo Bar's actually back anyway, isn't he? And but do we see any of those guys coming back and contributing? What do we think in terms of the likelihood of ins and outs?
I'm not sure if Ferreira will be coming back into the building for long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think on Ferreira, the way that they kind of couched it is that they didn't think he was a great fit for the Championship football, right? And they thought he would be a better fit for abroad. So I wonder if he's someone who just gets moved out of the stable completely if they go down, because, you know, if he didn't want to play in the second tier here, I don't think he's going to be thrilled about playing in the second tier in Italy either. Would be my guess. I don't really see any of those guys coming back that have been out on loan having a major impact next season. Personally, I think Luza, Ferreira, Kalou, Fletcher are probably done here, aren't they? And Hurtado might get another loan. Barr might get another loan, might play. But I've said it before on the pod and I'll say it again. I always think once you go out on loan, that's pretty much the start of the end for you at Watford, because there's always such a high turnover of players and managed coaching staff anyway that, you know, even if someone saw you previously and liked you, the chances that they're still in charge by the time you come back are fairly slim. I guess that's the one, to undermine my own point, that's the one good thing about, or one of the good things about Tom being here. He knows all these guys because he's been here a long time as a player as well. So I suppose they've got a little bit of that, you know, they might potentially have a bit of a champion in him, but If you could get rid of those guys and raise a few quid and clear some money off the wage bill and have the resources to bring two or three in, then I suspect he'd probably take that opportunity, wouldn't he?
Does the potential Udinese relegation open the door to any other reunions with people that we have currently on the books at Udinese? I'm thinking of the likes of players that would want to maybe come across, maybe the likes of Jordan Zamora, possibly Dominguez Quina, maybe Adam Massina. Maybe Kamara. I'm thinking of players that might consider the championship football was, you know, a better proposition for them than Serie B. I doubt the likes of De La Feu or Pereira will still be assets that belong to Udinese if they get relegated. I imagine they'll be off somewhere else. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean it's definitely not, it's definitely a possibility. I think it's going to be interesting to see, as you say, it's probably in some ways more appealing to be here if you're going to be in the second division. But it maybe is, you know, obviously the restructure and have to go on Udinese getting relegated would be far more significant than what would have to happen here for us after another season in the championship. So, you know, potentially it refocuses us into a more of a kind of front runner position in terms of their attention and where we see us operate. You know, we become maybe the better option for players that we're looking to bring in, and maybe they'll be placed here ahead of Udinese for a little while again. But, you know, on the flip side of that, it does give you less flexibility on deals like the Kamara deal we saw. You know, you don't really have that moving of money possibility anymore, not to the same degree at least. So, you know, maybe some players will come back into the fold, and it might just be not a case of, okay, well, we have to reassess all the players we have in our books, all the targets we have, and see how we have to reallocate them accordingly now. It's going to be a change, at least.
I think that's a great verb there, reallocate, because that's how they view it, isn't it? Very much, they, you know, all the players kind of belong to Pozzo pool, and they get allocated among the clubs as they see fit in any given moment, where the, you know, where do they fit as a player, the kind of style of football, the league strength, etc. You know, they do kind of, they move the pieces around constantly. So I think that's the perfect way of looking at it. I think the other thing is they've got so many clubs that they have relationships with after all these years that they will probably not have too much difficulty moving anyone out at Udinese that they can't, you know, sustain because of contract or just wants to move on, period. But I think it's going to be difficult for us to use them, as you say, in the way we have in the past, where we've kind of dumped players there. You look at the squad today, they've got Success, Davis, De La Feu, Kamara, Ferreira, Cabasele, and Pereira and Okoye, which is a pretty remarkable collection of players. And that's before you mention Messina and Kina, who are both out on loan as well at the moment from Udinese. So, yeah, I don't think it's a good thing for us, them potentially getting relegated. Final couple of questions. Quick one here. Ricky Aldridge at Ricky_Aldridge. Who will be the key players to build around the team next season? So we name two each.
I would say, I mean, I don't want to take the obvious choices necessarily. But assuming you're still here, I think Ismail Kone could be one. I think we saw ups and downs. I think he ended the season relatively poorly. You know, maybe against Middlesbrough, a slight improvement, but maybe I think under Tom Cleverley, we've not seen as much from Kone, have we? Responsibility changed a little bit in that position, and he wasn't quite playing to the standard we saw under Ismail, which is relatively high. I think he kind of had some of a breakout season for us. So I'd say Ismail Kone being one. And then secondary player to build around, I'm going to say, I mean, Wes Hoot has been useful for us. I think, obviously, you know, one player of the season, he's someone that is maybe one that you would talk about. We talk about changing personnel and so on. You look at that back line, he's probably the one that you would say is going to be a guaranteed player out of all of them there. And I think also, too, if we're going to have a change in shape again and we're going to move away from the back three, then Wes Hoot's going to be quite important defensively to kind of help with that restructure and help with the change. And along with pre-season, it's going to involve a lot of turnover, a lot of change, and a lot of preparation. I think he might be another key figure that you'd maybe not build around in the same sense that you're talking in regards to a young player that you kind of plan towards the future, but someone that can offer you some consistency in a position that's pretty important for us. And also most likely could be our captain, I assume.
Okay, cool. I will jump in now. I felt as though when we made a change during the season, Edo Kayembe really stood out. And so too did Ryan Andrews when we also dropped some of his defending responsibilities. So, yeah, so those two guys, I think, would be worth taking into consideration when thinking about how to play. Although, having said that, I already know that Tom Cleverley is planning to play with four at the back, isn't he? So Ryan Andrews might find it more challenging next season because he will have those defensive abilities. So in that case, I will revert to Edo Kayembe and Georgi Chakvetadze, who also...
That's just a good one.
You know, should be someone who we could look at his abilities and how we can best get them out of him.
Nice. Chakvetadze was going to be my first one. I was really scrabbling round for a second one, so I will go with Wesley Hoop because flaws though he has, he's the one centre-half that you can rely on, I think, to establish a consistent level. His availability has been great. Obviously, two games out with suspension has been the sum total of what he's missed this season. I think, as you say, Jordan, he's going to be captain. He's one of the few kind of players that you look at and go, he is a leader within this team. Final one, actually, is a bit of a toughie, so we may end up cutting this one out and giving him a proper answer on Twitter, but it's at Peter Johnson at Nascot Hornet. Or Peter Johnson at Nascot Hornet, I should say. Have any other teams in the Championship ever succeeded with minimal budget and using youth from an academy? Does Cleves have a chance of being successful, and is success defined as mid-table? I think we've probably covered off the part about what defines success this season. And if you'll forgive me, I'll leap in with one team that I can think of that has kind of done well in this level without much money and leaning on their academy in recent times. And that would, well, recent times might be a bit of a stretch here, but run with me, was Crystal Palace when they had that kind of crop of Klein, Zaha, Sean Scannell, Lee Hills, other players that I've forgotten, all kind of, who was the centre mid? John Bostock under Warnock. Yeah, you know, guys, that a lot of those guys didn't, Victor Moses, of course, a lot of those guys didn't, you know, amount to a huge amount in the game after that. Obviously, Zaha and Klein and Victor Moses had great careers, but they lent heavily on that kind of group for a season or so and survived and thrived isn't really accurate, but it was about 10 or so years ago equally, so I appreciate it might not be the most prevalent example. Or pertinent example. Is there any teams that kind of jump to mind for you guys, or is that one that we need to go away and think about and reply to Peter on Twitter?
I think that's a good example you just said there. It's a tough one, isn't it? Does playoff Watford count? The team that won the playoffs? Or
do
not
you know
really?
What? I think you've got to say it does in terms of resources. Maybe not in terms of giving youth a chance, but, you know, McNamee, Young, Blizzard all played a fair amount in that season, and Young was obviously pretty bloody important.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that might have been out of necessity rather than strategy. But still, you know, there are examples of it. You know, I think it's the teams that... I mean, actually, I'll say another good example, which... They didn't quite have they didn't get promoted, but even in recent times and a slight connection to Watford there, I'd say even Blair and Ismail's Barnsley, the season they got into the playoffs, were a really good example of teams that can punch above their weight from a financial standpoint, give youth a go. If you can say that bringing younger players in rather than just being from your academy is also a way of giving youth a go, then you could tick that box there as well. But, you know, teams that have been able to do that, there are a few. There are quite a few. And, I mean, even to an extent, Ipswich this year, they didn't make a massive amount of changes from their team when they got promoted. They didn't spend a ton of money in the Championship, and they've gone up automatically. So, yeah, there are chances, but it's a real timing thing as well, and it has to be a perfect storm. Oftentimes, you'll get teams that have elements of what it takes to to do something like that. But if they're not all lined up perfectly, as they have been at places like Ipswich, for example, then it doesn't always come off. So I don't think it's impossible.
No, I totally agree. And do you know what? Actually, just to leap in very quickly. The Malky Mackay team that Tom Cleverley was part of, you know, we had to work the loan system to get him and Lansbury. Craig Cathcart came in on loan, I think, that season, didn't he? And a few others that maybe didn't make as big a contribution. But we lent heavily on the academy at that point. Ross Jenkins, Sean Murray quite, but Ross Jenkins, Dale Bennett, Piero Mingoia, Matty Wichelow, who was the right back? Lee Hodson, you know. That was a really good time for us in terms of bringing, and again, they didn't all go on and have stellar careers, but a lot of them are still playing at some level or other and have had careers in the game. So looking close to home is probably the starting point.
Indeed. And as we can bring that back to the Middlesbrough game, I will do so. We had the five youngsters on the bench, Jack Greaves, Albert Ames, and Xavier Massa-Edwards all getting on from the bench. Jack Greaves for a decent period of time. Albert Ames and Xavier Massa-Edwards basically just for a couple of minutes in stoppage time. But Tom, following on from what you were saying there, I think we will see a lot more youth influence next season.
Yeah, I think we will. He said all the kind of right things in that respect. And if you hadn't listened to it already, I would recommend go and listen to another podcast. The Do Not Scratch Your Eyes wrap-up of the academy at your place sounded encouraging, made for the right kind of things. And I think there has definitely been progress in that department in recent times. So the guys that have been involved in that, Charlie Daniels obviously has been Aussie 18s, now 21s, Jimmy Gilligan and Richard Johnson, of course, at the top overseeing it. And I'm sure there are loads of other guys and girls that we don't know their names, but they seem to have at least been making progress in the background there. And it might all be kind of brought to fruition soon if we do have to dip in to the academy a bit more next season. So I certainly hope we do. It gives you something to kind of get behind and what have you when times are bleak, and it's a big part of our identity and our kind of culture and history at Watford, I think, to give those youngsters a chance. So personally, I'm fairly excited for that, I must admit.
Great. Well, that's basically us, I think. We don't need to do much more in Middlesbrough, do we? Because
no,
I mean the game is what it is, a basically end of season game between two teams that didn't really have much play for. We lost it. And whilst they reflect on that, I'm sure there'll be more attention turned to the sort of things that we were just chatting about, basically next season stuff. We will be doing a end of season review in a future pod. We'll also probably be talking about players that could go out, could come in, all of the exciting stuff in the transfer period. We'll also be having a bit of a break as well, because there won't be the need to bring a pod every week, but we will be getting stuff out here and there. As Tom mentioned earlier, a brief mention to the other podcasts out there have all been doing a fantastic job this season. Congratulations to all of them for all of their very hard work. It really does go without saying that there's a lot of stuff that takes place in the background, editing, etc., that it's really good work from all of them to get stuff out, and I'm pleased that we were able to join them in doing that. So thanks to everyone. Thank you to the listeners as well for joining us for what is now the end of our fourth season. Wow, can you believe that? Four seasons already. Fifth one coming up, and hopefully it's going to be a good one with Tom Cleverley at the helm. From myself, Matt, from Tom and from Jordan, we've been the Watford Buzz podcast, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.